It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
Creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims.
I paint his liver with some fava beans.
Soylent Green. Nice made out of people.
Feeding time.
I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren. And we are the Rants Macabre, now part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rants Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
Welcome to another Lunch Hour Review.
Yeah, this one's a little more somber tone since the movies weren't good this week.
We've had really bad luck this week, both of us.
Thankfully, it didn't cost us anything.
Yay for free terribleness.
Earlier this week, we got to watch Contracted Phase 2 at the IFC Theater here in Manhattan. It was a free screening.
I like how you say we got to watch it. Like it was like we got to watch this.
It was a privilege and an honor free.
Free movies.
Yeah. It was a Fangoria screening, also attended by the writer of the movie, Craig Walenziak, and there was a Q&A after, which we didn't stick around. To be fully honest, we kind of wanted to get out of there.
I just wanted to leave, and then also I thought, like, oh my God, what if I, like, make eye contact with him, and then I have to ask a question, and I can't have a question that sounds not snarky or shitty. So I said, it's best to leave. You know, what does your grandma say? Like something like
if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Right. Except that saying comes before podcasting was ever invented.
That's true. So here I'm doing it now.
Yeah, I thought it was a bad sign. You were in the bathroom, but there was a introduction to the movie where Walenziak talked about his influences and sort of treating this like a sort of horror comedy, but his obsession with body horror. And he went from referencing his love of David Cronenberg movies and followed that by Eli Roth's Cabin Fever. And my spider sense started tingling. Bad sign.
Yeah. I came right in on where he said this movie compared to the first one has more blood, more gore, and more maggots.
Yes.
That's where I came in on this speech. And I said to myself, ah, shit.
Just going, for me, when he went from Cronenberg to Eli Roth, I just, that really stuck in my craw because that's like saying I enjoy really perfectly cooked steak, you know, medium rare and delicious. And I like to follow that up with some filthy Mike and Ike's from a 25 cent
Absolutely.
Machine outside of the supermarket.
Like I like to put ketchup on it.
So it turned out spider sense was tingling
steak.
For a good reason.
Yeah.
We had a ketchupy steak with maggots. Why
yeah,
not?
Why not?
As long
Add
as this
some
analogy
more blood,
is going,
more maggots.
Yeah. So that said, I think it's a little tough to say why the movie didn't work in its entirety. We're going to talk about it, but I think part of that is that it was going for gross out moments.
Absolutely.
But it never followed through tonally as a horror comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was kind of uneven and, you know, it was not concise. And there was not, you know, whatever, if I'm going to speak grandly, there was not a collective vision.
Oh,
to this
no,
movie.
Absolutely not. Number one, I like to not do any sort of research before I go into a movie. So I thought it was going to be the same writer and director. And
yeah.
I thought this was just a continuation
Surprise.
Of Contracted. I was expecting what I loved about the first movie, not that I thought Contracted was the greatest thing, because we've talked about it before. I don't think it's that great of a movie, but I really loved how it really sat back in the pocket. I loved the quiet kind of the quiet way of speaking that everyone had in Contracted.
Yeah, and it was a character piece, you know, where the character is decaying.
Yeah.
And effective in that way, yeah.
But this had none of that. This was all forward, all in your face kind of terribleness. There was
I thought it started well, although that's almost kind of a cheat because
you
it started directly
well in the opening credits. Then it was downhill from there.
Right. So the opening followed by the opening credits go from the immediate moments from the first movie.
Yes.
So it starts with
Which is
Contracted's
the best part
beginning.
Of Contracted.
Yeah. Well, I thought the opening credits were beautiful. It's the autopsy scene that's very slow and pensive and, you know, scored well. And the visuals are kind of, you know, the very gritty details of an autopsy.
Oh, it was nice.
And then expose, you know, an open chest cavity and maggots. And I thought that was fucking terrific.
Yeah,
I thought,
that was
like,
awesome.
If that was setting the tone, then, like, this could be a good flick.
Yeah, I thought.
Except.
And then- And like I said, they're taking that first, the end scene of Contracted is what they put the first mm-hmm. Contracted to. And I said, oh, this is a good start because that's the best part of Contracted 1 is the last 10 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'm on this. Then we get the autopsy maggots. Great. And then...
And then the rug gets pulled out from under you. So this movie stars Matt Mercer's character. And like we said, it's a direct continuation of the first one. So he has had sex with the decaying...
Well, it was never like real sex. I mean, I don't think there's ever any like...
What?
Pee and Vigie, because all her insides fall out. Remember in the first Contracted?
No, he talks about it specifically. I mean, don't they show the clip where he's like, it's all tingly.
Yeah, but I thought he was just kind of
pulls
like,
out and shows maggots. It's
yeah, I thought like I thought just everything kind of falls out. Like, oops.
Oh no, his expression is like, I'm in here and it's weird. But yeah, it was Najara Townsend from the first one is not in this one except for those flashback moments. Mm-hmm. We do follow Matt Mercer, and he's kind of a schlubby. I thought it was interesting that he's some kind of social worker or like. Sort of rehab, yeah. Maybe not parole officer, but just court officer. And that was underplayed. That was the most interesting part of his character.
Actually, that was the most interesting part of his character.
Yeah. But so, I don't know. You don't really root for this guy. He gets called into questioning pretty early in the movie. And that's where I started to wonder, like, is the joke on us? Because the policewoman that is... You know, assuming she's a detective, she's right. Plain clothes.
We assume she's a detective. Yeah.
She might
but
have been.
But it's really making an ass out of you and me.
She might. She might very well have just been a Scottish woman who wandered into the office. Like, if you speak confidently, yeah, you could get through most doors.
It's true, except for she wasn't playing a Scottish woman. She is a Scottish woman playing an American.
Poorly.
With the worst American accent I've ever heard in my life. Just don't do it. Like, if you can't do an accent. Just don't do it.
It was a weird commitment to that actress, considering, like, everyone is just okay with her saying water.
Would you like some water? That's one of the first things
tea,
she says is
water.
Water. And I go, oh, no, this is weird. Something's weird here. And then for a while, I'm, like, listening to it.
Four dead bodies and three missing girls. I'm just trying to put the pieces together.
And I'm thinking, is this lady Canadian? And then I'm like, is this lady Irish? And then I thought, like, is this that Romero movie with those Irish people on the
Survival
island?
Of the Dead.
And then
you can never remember the name of that.
No, I can't. I put it out of my mind. And then I realized, no, this is Scottish, and this is weird. And it made me uncomfortable the entire time.
Yeah. If the commitment was to that actress, who knows? Maybe she was paying for this movie out of pocket, and she's like, under one condition, I want to play a detective.
Fair enough.
Okay,
lady.
If that's the case, then fucking rephrase it and say she's here on behalf of Interpol, and there's a concern for a viral outbreak.
But then
she's
also,
just a
like,
weird
I read her
Scotsman.
Bio, and she says she's been in the States since she was 16.
And almost as if to like lean in and wink at the audience, she is constantly drinking tea and offering tea.
Yeah, she's really obsessed with like offering things to drink to people.
And it's like she ain't your dad's LAPD detective. She drinks tea and is Scottish.
Yes.
So she also, the line of questioning, just the quote unquote police work in this movie mm-hmm. in the interviews stands out as unnatural and like dishonest. Like
every single person in this film, I think, is committing the crime of not doing any sort of research for what they're either the actor has not done any research to portray whatever job they have
or hold a gun in her case
or hold a gun. She's just like holding it all loosey goosey. Who knows where that bullet's going? And then like even the wording that everyone's using, no one knows what's going on. So the writer is equally as at fault for just like there's no research went into this.
It kind of feels like I've seen movies before.
I saw a cop on the street one time.
I was in another room when a cop show was on, and I wrote some notes.
I know that guns are loud, and you have to hold them in your hands somehow.
Holy part points out.
It was probably written on there. We just didn't see it. Face away.
Okay, so from a character that was terrible to probably the best character in the movie and kind of underused is the grandmother character.
Yeah, grandma needs to be all over that movie.
And I think, you know, they kind of recognize that, like, she is one of the best parts. So she is featured in the movie, although she's not written great. Great actress.
No,
just,
yeah.
I guess no one in this movie was written great. But she stands out as, like, hey, she was fun to watch.
Yeah, she was good. Those were, and that was, you know, actually the only kind of honest part of that entire film is his relationship with his grandmother.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really sweet, like, scene.
Yeah.
And then he gives her maggot AIDS herpes, and then it's all over from there.
Yeah. The villain, I don't know if it's the same actor, because in the first movie, the sort of, quote, villain is only
really
in blurry image and kind of in shadows and whatnot, but here he is fully featured. And I hated the direction they went. In the first one, he goes from a expected sort of common villain, the sort of shitbag guy who is going to have unprotected sex with a drunk girl. And in the, well, let's be specific, he does rape her. She is drunk. She is not really in a state where she can fight him off. And that's the opening tragedy of the first movie. In this one, it turns out he's an end of days cult, you know, apocalypse harbinger guy.
Right.
And yeah, he's not a good actor. He doesn't have good lines. You feel bad for that whole sort of evil end of this movie of like, all right, well, that's the villain. That's who we're meant to dislike. It's just, I don't know. None of it worked.
I hated everything about him, and not in like the way that like you're supposed to hate a villain, in like a, no, seriously, get off the screen. Okay? Please don't speak anymore. Don't make any more of your stupid recordings.
Ugh. It was somewhere between.
And who are you making these recordings for? Like, I know he sent one away, but then...
FBI, right? Because the guy...
He's making another one, though. How many do you got to send?
He's like an underground hip-hop guy. He's like, my newest mixtape, end of the world, bitches!
Exactly.
Except it's not so much the end of the world. It's like, I'm going to ruin your day with my terrible, you know, terrible rantings.
Also, did you notice they can't find him or whatever, so she has to use Google Maps. But all they have to do is search for his name, and they find his address, which is this scary old house. Did you notice?
Yeah, but it's...
Because they were like, where is this man?
It's inconsistent twofold, because they put his face on the local news,
right,
and they give his name.
Right.
And then later in the story, she takes the information that Matt Mercer's character has provided, which is his driver, his license plate.
And discovers
his
name.
Yes. And his address. Well, that's where she comes upon his address.
But come on, dude.
They already had his name.
What is this detective agency? This is the worst detective ever.
Scooby-Doo had more effective means.
Like, I'm better at Google
stalking out
than this woman.
It. So the movie kind of, it exists because Matt Mercer's character doesn't want to go to the emergency room because he becomes sure that he's going to be quarantined and
yes, because it's for the good
away.
Of everybody. You should. You have a disease that's killing everybody. Get your ass in quarantine.
So the fear of quarantine keeps him from going to the ER. But then we find out that like once they wind up in the hospital, their definition of quarantine's pretty loose, pretty
it's
lax.
Not a very good quarantine.
No one's
seems
in masks.
Like, again, someone who saw the word quarantine, maybe. And said, you know what? I bet that means hospital room.
With closed doors,
but
not even. Because anyone
open.
Can visit. A cop can visit. We're not going to make her wear a mask. There's no one in a hazmat
suit. And
then
the two cops that are supposed to be the guards that's not the security guy just, like, fuck off.
Yeah. They're like, some other shit's going downtown. Where you got this? You got this?
You're
going
to hold down this entire quarantined unit?
She's a detective. None of it makes sense.
It was terrible. I loved when she got shot, though. That was, like, my favorite moment.
She acted pretty well as someone who was in a tremendous amount of pain,
exactly,
bleeding off to the side. So, all the crapping on it aside, the practical effects were pretty good.
Some of them were very good.
Inconsistent. The first movie was sort of similarly inconsistent, where traditionally there will be a lot of photography on hand to sort of show the progression of this condition. It seemed like they were just figuring out, all right, well, this is day three in the daylight. He should kind of look like this or that. And then from one scene to another, it varied pretty wildly.
Well, I remember in the first one, that was one of my biggest complaints was the terrible continuity.
Yeah.
Like, is my eye going to be foggy? Oh, no, it's got better. Oh, no, it's bad again. And that
was kind of like, did you forget to bring the contacts? God damn it.
Well, we're going to film anyway. Go in. I'll just poke you in the eye so it'll be a little red. good. Let's go. Let's film it. Yeah, no, there was some really bad continuity errors. And
yeah. Although the commitment to the body horror made was sort of the driving force for a couple of the scenes. A lot of looking in mirrors and exploring your morbidity.
Yes.
And then a couple of scenes where they're sewing up things that, okay, they've sort of come to terms pretty early that, like, there's no cure for this. So why sew up a wound that isn't bleeding and
why
isn't going to mean,
cut
like,
out the maggots in the first place? You know you're going to die. Just let it. Now it's your new buddy. It's your new best friend. Get used to the maggots that live under your skin.
It was just short. It was just short of him looking at the audience and going, like, gross, huh?
It was a lot of that. Like, especially because he kept fucking with his teeth. And I thought to myself, you fucking know that your teeth are going to come out of your mouth. I know your teeth are coming in your mouth. Everyone in this room knows it. Leave your teeth alone.
Yeah.
And he kept messing with it. And then he finally pulled the tooth out.
You recently had some pretty substantial dental surgery.
It's all I do, yeah.
I've had my wisdom teeth out, and that said, every time in a movie when someone has a loose tooth, or even in Fight Club, a loose tooth, it's the worst version of picking a scab ever. It's like you've been tonguing it and being weird. It's, you know, it's uncomfortable. But under what circumstances it makes sense to reach in there and yank it out?
Yeah, never in my mind, because in some of the dental surgery that, you know, that I've been having, deals with like some broken teeth from a previous accident. So, and it was in one of those points where I was like literally brushing my teeth and I thought of the movie Contracted, because I was like, oh no, my tooth broke.
Did you consider maybe I should reach in there and pull it
never
out myself?
Never once would I ever do that. Honestly, I would do the opposite. If I could have like literally taped a tooth inside of my mouth, I would have like done that and said, no, everything's fine. I don't need to go. It's fine. But never once would I think I should remove this tooth from my mouth.
Not without an audience, at least.
Yeah, right. Never do I look in the mirror and think, you know what I need is one less molar. I'm going to yank that shit out right now.
Let's just simplify this. Minus one. Okay, so that was Contracted Phase 2. Yeah. I would say skip it. It'll wind up on Netflix streaming because it's IFC Midnight production.
Right.
But you could really, yeah, pass it. If you did like the first Contracted, which is still on Netflix streaming, or you're a fan of the body horror genre, I would recommend American Mary
by
the Soska sisters. Or even The Human Centipede 1 and 2. I mean, if you're committed to gross out stuff.
Sure.
But really, the high bar are David Cronenberg's Crash and The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Uh-huh,
that's,
I see that.
Those are tough ones to beat.
I would throw in Hostel 2 if you want to be grossed out but have an okay kind of story. I would do Hostel 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's a fine line between like body horror and torture porn. Nah, I guess not that fine a line.
I mean, to me, it's like body horror is that sort of ultra violence, ultra gore.
Body horror being the like masochistic side of torture porn. So that's what we got for Contracted Phase 2.
What exactly am I testing for?
Everything.
Escalate things, don't you?
What's happening to us?
Samantha infected me. Now we're both sick.
Everyone who was in quarantine is dead.
What you deserve is plague.
There's 37 new cases.
I'm running out of time here.
Okay, do you want to talk about your stinker next or mine?
I don't care.
Okay,
I'll go quick. The order. It's all garbage.
I watched Evidence from 2013.
And why did you watch this movie?
New on Netflix. Frankly, I was editing our Hammer episode, and I had sort of, my ADD can be reined in if there is an available distraction.
Okay.
So from time to time, I will look over, and I will, you know, experience another movie.
I can't do anything if I'm editing.
Oh, I don't watch good movies. It's usually bad television or Netflix shows here or there, or in this case, a terrible movie called Evidence from 2013,
nice.
Directed by Olatunde Osunanmi. It stars Stephen Moyer and Radha Mishal.
Well, see, already with Stephen Moyer, as soon as I would see that name, I'd think, God damn it. He's terrible.
He wasn't good in this.
He was not good in anything.
It was hard to tell where the bad acting started or the bad script left off. Because
what accent was he doing, too? That also affects his acting.
Oh, it's American, L.A.,
oh, fair enough.
California.
Okay. All right.
So most people know him from True Blood,
mm-hmm.
and I don't watch the show, but apparently he's the main vampire guy that
I watched
all
only
the, sex.
The first season. It was terrible. He was terrible. He was doing a Southern accent. He was a Civil War vampire. And Sookie also she was always calling him Beal. His name was Bill, but everyone just called him Beal. So whenever I think of him, I think Beal.
Beal. So Radha Mishal, I do like, and she's mm-hmm. competent, but again, the script is so bad, you can't really fault anybody. Right. They are both playing cops. Stephen Moyer is like the scruffy, poorly shaven, like, I can do this, boss, just let me give it a try. Like, he's coming back from, I don't know, he was suspended for poor acting.
Ah, good.
He does get brought in. The case is to oversee footage from a crime scene in the desert. Some disaster has exploded. There are bodies. There is a single survivor. And there is a bunch of footage from cameras, iPhones. So this is a found footage movie couched in a terrible police non-procedural.
Excellent. Excellent.
It was awful. It was just, the only thing it had going for it was the fresh dynamic of the killer being in a welding costume where he's got the welding mask and the, like, you know, hard leather apron. Mm-hmm. So that conceals their identity and also gives them a pretty badass weapon that I haven't seen before in movies. But if you figure a torch that is hot enough to cut steel, it's going to make some pretty big messes out of people.
Nice.
So there are some pretty great on-camera effects in terms of, like, just cutting limbs off a person with a blowtorch.
Which I kind of learned recently in last season of Walking Dead that cauterizing a wound is not really always the best thing. Because I would think, like, oh, then you've just missed that limb, but now it's cauterized, so...
Why is it a bad idea?
No harm, no foul. Because, I learned this from The Walking Dead, so I don't know if it's like a fact, but I mean, probably it is, because you'll go into shock and you'll die.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, which I was like, it worked pretty good in Boondock Saints, so, like, if you have a gun wound, put an iron on it. Everyone knows that.
Well, I think it probably works more effectively for small wounds that are bleeding profusely. I don't know how great an idea it is for, like, a complete limb gone.
I mean, say I got my limb, like, lopped off, let's say, like my hand.
Okay.
Because I've seen movies, my natural thing, if I'm in the wild with an iron, let's say, I would put my stump on that iron.
Oh, you would put your, yeah.
But that's not the right thing to do. You can go into shock and die.
Okay. I guess you're.
But what do I do with my bleeding stump arm?
Tourniquet. At first, and that's the thing that actually there's a little bit of confusion in movies, it seems, between tourniqueting, if that's a verb, or just applying pressure on a thing. You shouldn't tourniquet something if you plan on keeping it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Because it will just cut off all circulation to it, and that's where
you can let it up, though. There's also like a technique to that, because I've looked into this when that tourist got her leg cut off by the cab.
Yeah.
Yeah, you tourniquet and then you let it up every like 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there you go.
Good to know. Yeah. So that's something that came out
These
of this conversation.
These are the things that I look into.
All right. Well, so the movie itself you could skip because it's garbage. But now you have some details about the difference between applying pressure and tourniqueting. Again, good verb. I'm done with that. I would say some of the on-camera kills, because they were done with the blowtorch, were pretty badass.
Yeah.
But separate from that, the movie's terrible. The movie within the movie is also terrible. And it's telegraphed from a mile away. So you know in the first 30 minutes who's the killer, why, etc.
That's a bummer.
Ah!
I also watched Garbage. It's another IFC. Thanks, IFC, for this week. It's called Inner Demons with an S because Inner Demon is some Australian movie that I would assume is just better than this one.
It would have to be, it sounds like.
This movie is from 2014. It was directed by Seth Grossman, who actually produced a couple episodes of Intervention and also The Butterfly Effect 3. So this is the caliber.
I didn't know they got there.
Yeah, that we're looking at here. It was written by a guy named Glenn Gehrs, who wrote this screenplay for Fracture, which is a movie. I have never seen it. But people are in it, like Ryan Gosling.
Oh, wait. His was the junkie lawyer story. Okay, it wasn't a horror movie at all. It was
No, it's just a movie that I recognize people who are actually in it.
He directed that one?
No, he wrote the screenplay for this. The writer wrote the screenplay for that.
Okay.
And also for the movie Mad Money, which also is another movie that I have not seen.
The cover for this one was the pentagram with needles.
See, we got the bad cover on that's the cover on
Netflix streaming.
But the cover on IMDb and for other things for it is actually a spoon that's all like
cruddy from being a heroin spoon.
Yeah. Okay. And so that would have actually explained a lot more and I would have kind of known what I was getting into.
Okay.
This movie is done
that movie could have
found
just
footage.
Dirty Spoon could just be like, this is the story of a filthy chef.
This is just, they don't wash their dishes. This is done like Intervention though. So it's filmed as if this girl is going through intervention,
that
which sounds
been interesting.
Kinda cool, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like the whole thing sucked, it just wasn't good, you know what I'm saying? The main girl is a girl who I'd never seen before. I think she's never done anything before. Her name is Lara Vosburgh, but she's beautiful. She's like a model, she's stunning. Acting not so much, but if she could model, if she's tall, that girl should model. Everything else is pretty terrible.
Rarely do reviews include like a career advice, career change, please.
You should be a model because you're gorgeous with your mouth closed. She was playing like the 16-year-old girl. I don't know how old this girl is in real life, but she's probably in her 20s, mid-20s.
But it's formatted like the TV show.
TV show Intervention.
Okay. Yeah. At 16,
I mean,
that's very
cool.
Young.
Okay. And she's a heroin addict, and she's a heroin addict because it keeps the demons down, essentially.
Okay. So she's like self-medicating a possession of sorts?
Yes, exactly. And the dad's kind of a loser. Her mom is really religious.
Okay.
And so, I mean, there's things of it that you think, like, this could be...
Great set pieces,
Yeah, but there's just some really terrible parts. And when all the shit hits the fan, the acting turns hysterical. Like, bad hysterical acting.
Okay.
So,
wait, hysterical funny or characters who are just acting like maniacs?
Characters that are acting like maniacs.
Okay.
Hysterical. And it's hysterically funny as well. We actually reran one scene just because it was so stupid sounding. We're like, this is hilarious. Let's listen to this again. So it's not good. I would skip it if I were you.
Mm.
If you want a POV exorcism, do The Last Exorcism. That's going to be your...
And maybe even when watching that one, skip the last five minutes.
Stop it. Stop it 10 minutes.
From it's a pretty great movie if you...
Except for the end.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I would suggest. Or if you want something that's like a real horror show, just watch Intervention. I love that show.
Are we good?
I think we're good with bad.
We're good with bad. All right. Well, that was a little bit of a long one in terms of lunch hour reviews, but all cautionary tales. Avoid these movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're welcome. You've been listening to The Rance Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rance Macabre, contact Ken at Fangoria.com.
That's all for me, Darren, signing off.
And I'm Mindy. Thanks.